Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is June 27th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 38 of Who's Reading the Organon. We'll be opening up the Organon from the very beginning. We're kind of jumping around, and we're going to see what happens at the start of the Organon, how Hahnemann opens it up for us. On another front, we have a bunch of news. Vera, you're there.
Yes, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we have a really good sound today, so hopefully things will really be good. Should we start? I guess could start with a little bit of inspiration. This is also from Dr. Hanana, who I talked about last time. And this little tweet she gave is, obstacles are those things you see when you take your eyes off the goal. And I'm trying to get a handle on what this all means for me personally, what this means for the homeopathic community. We just have to get together and stick together and look at where what we're trying to reach in this lifetime and make it happen. The reason I say that is because June 29, 2010, there's going to be a protest at Brighton Center in the UK, and there's a whole article on HWC linking to Homeopathy Medicine for the 21st Century, which is a fantastic website that is informing the public and homeopaths and those who believe in homeopathy to get out there and cast their vote, stand up for homeopathy with this protest, because there's some political activity going on. And did you have a comment? I thought I heard something. And we really need to do something about this to change the atmosphere and make it happen for homeopaths around the world. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to say was that on HWC, I've posted a new page that says there is a new categories listing. So from now on, I'm hoping that we're going to have to get this as a teaching and educational program out to HWC members, that we're requesting when they put up a blog or a discussion in the forum or even on their videos to help categorize and inform the public exactly what type of article they're putting up. There are four categories. One, if this is about classical homeopathy, put that up. Just the first thing, your category is classical homeopathy. And that's defined as written by the National Center for Homeopathy in Washington, D.C. Use their definition, which means that we're using the principles of the similimum, the provings, the method of transmission is included, which we've been discussing for the last couple of months, and that it's a single remedy application, that the remedies are individualization, so they're not blanket this for that kind of thing. It's individualized to the person, and use of the minimum dose. So make sure that that is written up there. And then the second type of categorization or classification for your article could be modality homeopathy. These are people use something a little bit different, like the sensation method, the Sankaran method, use of the periodic charts that Shulton is teaching, or Grant Bentley's facial analysis. There are many other methods that are being used today, which are a style of homeopathy, but not defined as classical. And we just want to let people know that. And then there's other healing modalities. So we don't want people to be confused that if you're using sound therapy, hydrotherapy, art therapy, Reiki, or any of the other kinds of healing modalities, which can be very helpful to people, that they're not confused with homeopathy per se. And lastly, we have so many interests. I personally love to talk about the environment, about nature, about culture, just anything. And for those, that's topic number four, news and topics of interest. So we're going to try and organize homeopathy world community a little bit better and define what homeopathy is for people so they're not confused. I hope everybody's happy with this, and we're going to get it to work. Okay. I think we're ready to start, even though there's tons of things going on in the network. We'll just have to talk about them later.
Okay, ready, Debbie?
Yes, I am.
Let's go back to the very beginning. Aphorism
yes.
1. This should give everyone a better feel about starting from the beginning as opposed to my tendency to hop around in the middle of the end. But now everyone who has been reading along with us can honestly say they have read to the end of the Organon. They haven't read the middle bit
yet. We didn't get to the last page, though, I don't think.
Yeah, maybe we'll save that right for the end.
Yeah, save that for the end.
To keep some order. Okay, aphorism number 1. These aphorisms a lot of people will be more familiar with, since people tend to know the first aphorisms of the Organon. The physician's high and only mission is to restore the sick to health, to cure, as it is termed. And here we have a footnote. His mission is not, however, to construct so-called systems by interweaving empty speculations and hypotheses concerning the internal essential nature of the vital processes and the modes in which diseases originate in the invisible interior of the organism, whereon so many physicians have hitherto ambitiously wasted their talents and their time, nor is it to attempt to give countless explanations regarding the phenomena in diseases and their proximate cause, which must ever remain concealed, wrapped in unintelligible words and an inflated abstract mode of expression, which should sound very learned in order to astonish the ignorant, while sick humanity sighs in vain for aid. Of such learned reveries, to which the name theoretic medicine is given, and for which special professorships are instituted, we have had quite enough, and it is now high time that all those who call themselves physicians should at length cease to deceive suffering mankind with mere talk, and begin now, instead, for once, to act that is really to help and cure.
Mm-hmm.
This is homeopathy, and this is Hahnemann.
He's got a very strong opinion, and he's had enough. He wants to change the way things are going on in his day and age, and he's very emphatic about it.
I think also we should take into account that, because I remember when I was a student, we used to laugh at these rants. We used to find them funny because, you know, it's Hahnemann ranting again. And he goes on and on against allopathy. And he goes on and on about how the doctors are stupid and this and that. But when you read it, when you think about what he was dealing with, what he was looking at it, he'd seen a lot of cases. He worked as a regular doctor. He'd been around sick people for years. I mean, certainly by 1810, when the first Organon was published, correct me if I'm wrong, but Hahnemann had seen sick humanity sighing in vain for aid. Hahnemann liked things to work. Someone recent, whatever, it's, you see Hahnemann's passion both for finding cure and his disgust with anything that dressed up as people looking to help, looking to cure. Now, there's certainly another point that I'd like to make about this footnote, which is interesting for discussion. Hahnemann refers to the invisible interior of the organism. Now, there are those who nowadays say that the interior of the organism is no longer invisible because you can do blood tests, you can do CT scans, you can do MRI, you can basically almost chop the human being up and put them back together again. So there's nothing invisible. Therefore, we can see, we understand everything about how diseases originate. You're familiar with that one, Debbie?
I suppose that there are people who are, I don't want to say arrogant, but they think that they know because they can see a little bit deeper into the cellular level or micro level. But, you know, you can always go a step further, and we can never get to the end of that. And I have a blog about that, 10 levels of, you know, into the astronomical plane, and also within the deepness of how small you can get or how large you can get. I don't think that we can ever get to know it all. So
I think we can't get to know it. I think we can't get to know it necessarily scientifically to the hidden interior of man. I think there is part that remains hidden, if only because science goes after what it knows to go after. If there's something that's totally unknown and hidden, it's like saying, will the child who's not in the classroom put his hand up? It doesn't happen. I think also the whole body-mind interface that Hahnemann was certainly aware of, there are those who are trying to map that interface through hormones. There's a book by Candace Pert, The Molecules of Emotion, where she goes into the hormonal messengers that show the mind-body interface. It's uncharted territory. It still is, I think, an invisible interior.
Yes. As a matter of fact, when I was doing a lot of guided imagery, I would use that information just on a subconscious level and would tell... say this kind of a guided imagery when your eyes are closed and you're breathing and you're just in a state of relaxation that brings you into your interior, into the darkness, and says, my healing can go in whatever is seen or unseen, and go into those places and bring the light and the energy and the healing into those places that are even unfathomable, so that these are things we can't really reach, but we can use our mind and our words and thoughts to bring us into this place that is unknowing and unseen. It's a very powerful kind of meditation.
I think so. Also, what Hahnemann is saying, he's not saying we can't reach that invisible interior. As we proceed, we see that through treatment, through the remedies, through seeing how that invisible interior expresses itself through external symptoms and signs, we can reach the invisible interior. And in fact, we have to reach it. But his argument is more with those who construct so-called systems concerning the internal essential nature in the hidden interior. I think that's where his argument is with the system, with the allopathic system that speculates about what's going on inside through no plan, through no idea.
Well, you know what? I want to give the scientists credit, because I do believe that God works through humankind, and if He's given us this information, it may, and it probably is, important information. It's just, how do we use this information? So they do go into uncharted territory every time we learn something new about the human body. And it may be, we just need to know how to use it. is my way of thinking. This is important to learn about molecules, to learn about electrons and quantum mechanics and the hormones. And it gives meaning, it gives purpose, it gives wisdom to people, but how do you use it? Do you use your own machinations to build these theories to how it works? That's perhaps the problem.
I think also, I don't think Hahnemann would have any gripe with conventional science as it's developed. I think that where he would potentially have a gripe is with medical science. And when we look at where medical science is today and where other areas of science have advanced to, in other areas of science, we're in science fiction. We're no longer, certainly those of us who've been around for a few years, we see things these days that we were beyond our wildest dreams, even if it's just simple things like fax machines
right. And
email. Anyway, would you like to move on to aphorism two?
If you don't mind, can we go to a uncharted territory? I don't know. I've been thinking about the Hippocratic Oath and how this relates to the Organon. Is this someplace we can go, or what do you think?
I suggest that we go to it when we compose the text of the Hippocratic Oath.
Okay, great.
And then so everyone can relate and participate.
Okay, so this is going to come up pretty soon. Organon aphorism number two.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where we're going? The highest ideal of cure is rapid, gentle, and permanent restoration of the health, or removal and annihilation of the disease in its whole extent in the shortest, most reliable, and most harmless way on easily comprehensible principles. That's it. One short line. So he's looking for, as we said in my intro, the intro that Hahnemann has given us, obstacles are those things you see when you take your eyes off the goal. And he's saying, where's the beeline? How do you get there, the fastest, easiest, gentlest way to cure?
What's interesting to me is my understanding of this aphorism is we're talking about rapid, gentle, and permanent. To me, rapid means fast. Gentle means as painless as possible. And permanent, there are different definitions of cure, which is interesting. I think in the conventional world, definition of cure used to be 5 years with no return of symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Right.
And then I heard something that it had gone down to 2 years without return of symptoms. I'd be interested to hear whether people know what Hahnemann's definition of cure in terms of permanence was, how long a time with no return of symptoms. If anyone has that information through lesser writings or similar, that would be interesting to know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was speaking to someone recently who was talking in terms of gentle, and he believed that cure has to go through pain, through a certain degree of pain. It might be gentle in terms of continuous pain of the disease. I'm not sure that I agree with this. There are also those who say gentle is relative to the degree of pain that patients suffered through conventional treatments in Hahnemann's time. On the other hand, I think that the degree of pain that people suffer through chemo treatments in our time, so do we still have the same comparison of gentle, meaning probably painful but not as bad as conventional? I think gentle should be gentle.
Well, there's a couple of things that you stated. One is how long is it in conventional medicine considered to be a cure, which I think that there is being a redefinition of that today in contemporary Western medicine, that there really is not a definition of cure anymore. Now it has become to maintain life with the disease. So, for instance, taking insulin while you have diabetes, or going through chemo treatments and whatnot, taking your medication to keep you alive. And there really isn't any cure because the disease, it's living with the disease. I think that is now the mentality of how you care for somebody medically. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I have heard of that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're aiming for. So, in other words, you're taking a medication or a drug to take care of these symptoms that you have, and that's considered cure. That's all you can do. There's no really removal of the disease.
That's like when people say to me, I have heard that from patients when they'll say, by the way, just when I ask about medications, they'll say, oh, I'm on blood pressure medication. I'll say, oh, is there a problem? And they say, no, I'm on medication and now there is no problem. So,
right.
That's what you're saying, right? That's what you're referring to.
It's something similar to that. So you're saying they're heading off the disease. That's kind of more preventative rather than they've already got the disease and now they're just taking medication on a continuous basis for the rest of their life. So I think those are two different things. One thing is a woman who has the BRCA gene and she's got family history of breast cancer. So she goes ahead preventatively and takes Taxol or tamoxifen and has her breasts removed. So that's preventative in their mind. And then the other side of the coin is somebody's already got the disease and now they're taking medication to just reduce the symptoms. So high blood pressure medication or things like that.
Right, but what's interesting with the high blood pressure medicators, especially with some people who take diabetes medication, but especially the high blood pressure people, they say there is nothing wrong, I am balanced on medication. They don't perceive it that there is something wrong and I need medication to balance it. They see the medication as, they almost see it as preventative when it's not preventative at all. It's treatment, it's therapeutic.
Right. It's treatment, and what I consider it maintenance. That's what I call it, to maintain that balance.
The other thing
there was something. Okay, go ahead.
In this aphorism is that, cure for Hahnemann is only when it's on easily comprehensible principles. So the highest ideal. Now, I think that has a lot to do with being repeatable. If a person is cured from a disease using laying on of hands or some form of healing, then on the one hand, maybe that particular healer can repeat the action. But on the other hand, it's not...
Okay, we are losing our sound coming in. She's talking about other kinds of healings, other kinds of modalities, but the question in her mind is something about Hahnemann's principles, that this is something that is repeatable. It's very scientific. So, dear, we kind of lost you there. I don't know whether you're still with us. Maybe
can you hear me, Debbie?
Yes, you were talking about somebody laying on hands and repeatable action.
What I was saying is that within this aphorism, you can see that Hahnemann is aiming towards the concept of repeatability, that something, when it's based on an easily comprehensible principle, can be utilized. It's a tool that can be used by anyone who studies it, who learns how to use that tool properly. And I don't think Hahnemann would say if someone goes to a faith healer or a Reiki master or whatever and is cured of their symptoms, the symptoms don't come back for years and years and years and one can see that there's a cure that's happened. I don't think Hahnemann would say that isn't a cure. On the other hand, the highest ideal of cure is one that can be repeated easily. And it can only be repeated easily if it's based on easily comprehensible principles.
Okay, so in other words, somebody who's doing some kind of other kind of healing, a failure or whatever, that is more of a gift or a talent that individual has. But as a medical science, it's something that can be learned, something that can be passed on, something that is in your toolbox of scientific endeavor, that these are the remedies and this is the method. So it's a way of it's teachable. But
exactly.
Somebody who's just got a special gift, that's a one person thing. It's not really part of classical homeopathy. So
exactly.
That's really a good point. Good point. There was something else that you said earlier on. I see if I remember what it was. The gentle pain. You were talking about what is considered gentle and rapid. And I think that you will hear very, very often that you have to go through the fire. You have to go through the pain in order to get to the other side. That this is just part of the healing. So to take chemo, to make yourself sick as a dog and just wipe out your total immune system, other kinds of healings that the medical science provides can be very, very difficult for an individual to go through. And that, I don't consider that painless. I don't consider that gentle. It's both emotionally, mentally, and physically trying. You know, we've only got a couple of minutes left.
Right.
It's gone really fast today. Okay, so do you have a comment about that?
I think that the idea of no pain, no gain is a folk belief. I don't think it's inevitable. I don't think it's essential. One of the areas where I've seen it is in a different modality that I have practiced in the past of reflexology. There are reflexologists that say if you can't hear your patient shouting in the town 20 miles away, then you haven't been doing your job properly. And then there are other reflexologists who say don't aim to cause pain, aim to work in a way that resolves the problem, but pain is not an essential part of it. And personally, I think pain is not an essential part of it, but I think if people believe they have to go through pain, they will not accept a healing modality that's too easy on them, which is probably a karmic issue. But
okay, so we need to have our umbrella statement for today because we've got just 2 minutes to go. So let's see, what do we say about the very beginning of the Organon, how he introduces this incredible book to us? Any thoughts?
Nothing clear.
I'm going to read the first line, Organon Aphorism number 1. The physician's high and only mission is to restore the sick to health, to cure, as it is termed. So he quantifies or qualifies the sentence with the as it is termed, which leads us to the footnote. And we need to read that carefully and make it a part of our life, make it a part of our method of healing and our concern about the patient, the one who's suffering. And think about how they are going through their illness. Consider them. And consider your highest goal, your highest mission. I want to thank everybody for listening today. There's really a lot going on in the world, and we need to pay attention and do our best. Vera.
Okay, bye to everyone. Bye, Debbie.
Bye-bye now. Everybody write something on the blog, get active, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Until next time, take your Organon off the shelf and read it.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.